broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of Refresh Your Wealth with yours truly, Mark Kohler, my amazing co-host, Matt Sorensen, both trying to share info that might help you in your quest to live your American dream, save taxes, build wealth. They're the yin and the yang. It's just not talking about making money. We want to save it for you, and then we want to protect it. And for all you business owners and investors out there, we're hoping that we can be a authoritative, enjoyable, fun podcast for you to get answers to your difficult tax and legal questions. That's us. Was that a good enough summary?
That was exceptional. We should just record that and play that for every week moving forward.
I like it.
I like that. I mean, all those things, we'll making money. There's a lot of podcasts about making money.
Yeah.
But they don't have many podcasts about keeping the money, right? We got a little, you gotta have a good defense game too. All right.
Defense.
You gotta score points, but you don't want people to score points on you. And those main candidates being the IRS, who can definitely score a lot of points on you, take away a lot of points that you've put on the board, and of course creditors. So,
yeah. Speaking of which, I mean, like literally, I just jumped off my computer writing up a little settlement agreement with a deal gone bad, and trying to keep everybody happy and playing mediator. Yeah. I hate this. Can't wait till it's off my plate. I just want to get back to money issues, not squabbles, but it's hard. Right. So,
it happens. You're out there making money. You're business owner, self-employed, real estate investor. You got to deal with this. So, we're full spectrum on this, but, today we're going to get a little off topic though. I don't know, too off topic, but maybe a little more touchy feely.
Well, and you know what? I don't even know if I would agree off topic because you know me, I think the 10-year plan,
legal at least.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Okay. Here's my sales pitch for everybody listening. Right. I know a lot of you jump on just for the weekly tax and legal tip. So you might not like the title of the topic or think it is too touchy-feely, but let me say this. Having a 10-year financial plan means, and we're going to talk about it, what is that picture that you're working towards going to look like 10 years from now? And that's going to dictate so much of your tax and legal planning now. They go hand in hand. We get on the phones with clients and we're like, well, what's your plan here? Well, I don't know. I just thought I needed an LLC, or I just put money in my IRA that's what I'm supposed to do, right? I'm supposed to just pay off my home. No, what's the plan? And so I think they go hand in hand. So that's my, I don't know, Matt, did I sway you in any form or fashion?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, what tax strategies are you using? Are you buying real estate on the side? Is that a full-time thing? Are you starting a small business? Do you already have one? There's a lot. We'll go into that. There's definitely lots of crossover, but really good topic. One that Mark and I have loved to talk about. Hopefully you'll get a sense of that as we dive into it, because it's really meaningful. It's very, very meaningful and effective. I do it myself. Mark does it. We think it's really some of the successful people are doing, and it helps you keep on track, know where you're going. But of course we will dive into that, in a moment, but before we do,
I want to throw the one more enticing comment, if I may. Oh,
okay. All right.
If I may, I've got,
you're just going to keep selling it.
I just grabbed two Post-its off my desk that I've been saving for this podcast. And I got these from a client who we were just having a great conversation, and he said two or three things. I was like, oh my gosh, I love the way you said that. And I wrote it down. You know who you are out there. And if you want me to give you credit on the show, I will. I just don't want to throw out your name out there without your permission. We do respect the attorney-client privilege concept around here, much like Better Call Saul. So, all right. So here's the first one. You make your money when you buy real estate, you collect it when you sell.
Right.
And the theory being, again, part of this 10-year plan, what are you trying to do 10 years from now? And we want to make our money now with a strategic buy and then collect it down the road when we sell or exit. And a lot of times people go, I'll make my money when I sell. Whoa. Are you making money now with this purchase? Are you thinking ahead? And I thought it was a deep concept. Do you like that one? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that before?
I've heard that one before.
Oh, well, whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, I've heard that one. I've heard it another way, that you don't make money in real estate when you sell, you make money in real estate when you buy. Similar concept.
Yeah. Okay.
It's here's a good another one, though.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Oh, you got two. Okay.
One more. It's all part of this plan. Okay.
Okay.
You make wealth with concentration, but you keep it with diversification. I just stumbled on my tongue. Okay. Let me say it one more time. Mm-hmm. You make wealth with concentration, but you keep it with diversification. So
that's very true.
Yeah, you're focusing in on a purchase or an investment. Then you step back and go, okay, I'm going to keep that by diversifying. Now, for example, one example is some people go, I can't buy more rental property. It's too risky. I'll just stick with one or two. Well, it's actually less risky to own three or four rentals versus one or two, because if one rental has a problem in a given month, you've got three others to help chip in when one may not be outperforming your expectations, or meeting your expectations. So diversifying with a portfolio of real estate is better than buying one rental and hoping that turns out well. Did you like that one?
I do like that one. Yeah, that one is, I've not heard that one, and it's very, very true. All the financial advisors are all about diversification, but no one got rich, investing in a diversified way. Mm-hmm. That's really only a way to keep your money.
Yeah.
Those who have had success have been good at doing a certain amount of things a lot, just doing it over and over and over again. I love that one. I'm going to write that down too.
Well, thank you. Now this is the last point is that this is what's frustrating is a lot of times clients and people that hear us or read our books put our services in a box. There's my tax and legal. When I need you, I'll call you for tax and legal. When in reality, our objective is really to look at the big picture when we meet with clients, which means also looking at a timetable of what your goals and plans are. And if your accountant, think about this, if your accountant doesn't know what your 10-year plan is, what type of advice are you getting? If your asset protection and structuring attorney doesn't know what your 10-year plan is, are they going to make good decisions regarding your current structure? Overdo it, underdo it? So being able to share what your 10-year vision is for yourself and then engaging the professionals that you may think aren't a part of that decision-making process when in reality they are, that's where we fit and we love it and we get into that. And so it's just so important to have this conversation. So after our tax and legal tip, we're going to break down what we think it takes to build a 10-year plan. And I've done it, Matt's done it, and we'll go from there. Okay, so there's my introduction, Matt. I hope I grabbed that audience.
I like it. Yeah, I think that was great. That was great. I'm still here, so I'm not, you got me.
Yeah, you're stuck. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to do the legal tip?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, man, I wish I was playing the guitar right there. You know, just ripping it on stage. I've been playing my guitar more, by the way.
Someday, future in your life.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, I want to talk about some contract terms. I know it's not sexy. I know it's not exciting, but it's really important that you understand that the terms of a contract dictate what's going to happen. And I've said this before, and so if you've listened to me enough, you may have heard this, but a bad contract makes a bad deal. You can have a good deal, but if you have a bad contract, that equals a bad deal. So, and we've seen that many times, good business arrangement, a good investment that has a crappy contract, and you end up failing in your investment or business because the contract sucks. And here's the pitfalls people fall into.
And you know what, Matt, if I may just add, and a lot of people think, well, I'll make more money if I cut the cost of reviewing the contract. Right. I don't want to pay for an attorney. Yeah. I'll make more money. I don't want to.
Yeah.
When in reality, that's almost an insurance policy that you're having a set of eyes look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me go over some pitfalls and things you got to overcome. Okay. First, if you've got a good deal or a good business arrangement that you're like, this is such a great deal, this is such a good agreement I've got, or I'm partnering with this person or working with this vendor, or I'm buying this piece of real estate, that's the one you want to document the most, but it's the one people document the least because they think it's such a good thing, it's so great that I don't need to stress about this. You're overconfident about it, and it might be such a great thing, but that's the one you should tie up more than any, right? Because it's very promising for you. So document that relationship. And I want to say another thing too. It's not just about hiring a lawyer to help look it over. That's important. But it's also about putting your own time and effort into it. I think a lot of people misunderstand the help that a lawyer can provide. A lot of times I'll have a client say, oh, I got this bad deal and, you know, I want to know what's going to happen on it. My first question is, well, what was the contract? What did the contract say? Well, we didn't have a contract. Or if you did have a contract, they didn't even read the thing. Okay, well, the contract is, you write the law in the contract between you and the other party. Whatever you write is what you guys have agreed to. That's what a court's going to enforce. It's not like there's some case that's going to override your contract. So you want to make sure that the actual terms in your deal are written into the contract. So document it. The other pitfall I wanted to say is, don't rely on someone else to draft the contract for you. Unless you're taking your own time and effort into it, thinking through it, thinking through the terms that matter for you, or having a lawyer do it on your behalf. But just because someone else had a lawyer draft the contract or spent time doing a contract themselves doesn't mean it's helpful for you. So you got to negotiate and write in the terms for you. And don't be shy about doing that. Anybody that's been in the business world is not going to have a knee-jerk reaction to that. So make sure you're taking the time to look out for your own interests. And again, I think some people think, oh, there's just a lawyer saying, you know, hire lawyers. No, I'm just saying, put your own dang time into it first. Read it, understand it. If it was worth talking about as you negotiated it, it's worth putting into the contract.
I love it.
That's it.
Good. And we could talk about contracts all hour. In fact, I think they have a whole year of this when you're a new lawyer in law school or a new law student, a whole year just on contracts.
Yes, they do.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's on the bar exam. So, yeah, I just, again, I don't want your good deals turning into bad deals because you had a bad contract. Let not that happen to you and be your fate. You listen to the Refresh Your Wealth podcast.
Yeah. And I alluded to this when I jumped on the show today, as I said, I literally over across the room here sitting on my computer are settlement agreements on a deal that was just terribly documented. Just some of the people didn't even sign anything. It was all handshakes. Some of it was email. Some of it was text. You can't do business like that. And I know lawyers can be butt heads. You've got to find some contractual asset protection type lawyers for your deals going in. And if they do turn into a fight, you go get a different lawyer for the fight. If you're going to get divorced, you get a different lawyer. You don't go to your eye doctor to work on your feet and have foot surgery. But we think lawyers do it all, you know. And oh, my brother-in-law is a lawyer. I'm sure he can help me with this. No. If your brother-in-law delivers babies as an OBGYN, he's not going to do your podiatrist work for your foot. They're two different things. And the same scenario with your legal work. You don't have to spend a ton of money with a lawyer to get a little contract work done.
I'm surprised you're bringing up your foot fungus issue you've had on the show. I didn't.
Oh, that was a good one. Good one. Fair enough. I'll get you back.
A violation right there. Did I just breach some, you know,
no,
or is that maybe attorney client privilege?
Some sort of privilege was violated there. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that foot problem has been violating many people. So
now let me assure you folks, there is no foot fungus going on. That's why he can joke about that, because if it was real, I'd really be offended. You know, he'd be off my,
yeah,
I'm the only guy that sends him a cool birthday present. So he can't go too far on the show.
I was seriously joking, but okay.
That was good. Okay. Tax tip time.
Yeah.
All right.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right, so I felt today I was going to do a 1-2 punch on the tax tip. I want to do something simple and broad in scope that everybody can, just low-hanging fruit. All of you will appreciate this. And then I wanted to give a technical one, because sometimes our listeners that have been with us for years, like, Mark, I've heard that tip so many times. Give me something new. So I want to do a little of both.
So like the 1-2 punch being like the little soft little jab that sets you up for the big hook punch that's going to knock you out. Is that the 1-2 punch? A
couple jabs, you know, just softening you up. You know, we'll see.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Body blow, body blow. Remember that video game back in the 80s? Body blow, body blow.
Yeah. Okay. So Tyson's punch out.
All right. So the first one is, everybody, we're coming up on that season. It is the holiday season, and many of you will be taking a trip somewhere. Even if it's a drive or a flight, you're going to go somewhere. Well, let's make sure we incorporate a tax strategy here. Travel, and I just shot a YouTube video on this that went live today. So many of you, please get over to YouTube, type Kohler and travel, and you'll see that video. Please click the bell icon, share it. And it's a great little video that summarizes the travel expense. I'm not going to go in depth as much as even that little 8-minute video. But I want to remind you that as you're traveling these holidays, think about your board meeting. Think about a little workshop. I'm doing Philadelphia in a week, Orange County in December, Hawaii in November. Those are very affordable workshops that include lunch and a workbook. Great little kind of follow up for the year end planning things that you should be considering. But find a workshop of any type of business sort that would enhance your business. Do your board meeting, visit a rental property, talk to a client or a customer. And you know, the side note is this is a great way to get away from the family during that excursion. You know, this is your excuse. I'm giving you an excuse to go, you know what? I got a meeting with a client. Mm-hmm. What? We're all going to stay around and play Pictionary. Yeah, sorry, I got to go. This is important, you know, and boom, you're out. You're going to be so grateful to Matt and I that we gave you a get out of jail free card when everybody's
You know, it's funny. I had a client attend my self-directed IRA summit in Southern California 2 years ago, getting audited by the IRS. And they wanted, because he expensed that whole trip, went to SoCal and the hotel and stuff. And they wanted evidence that he actually attended. So we had to provide verification that he was actually there from his IRS audit. So, but he was fine once we did.
That is cool. That is cool. So, you know, and some of you may think it's trivial, but it really does add up. If 58 cents a mile, if you drive 1,000 miles there and back, that's 2,000 miles, 58 cents a mile, that you're over at $1,000 write-off. Now, you're not going to write off the gas. Remember, most of you are going to do miles unless you have a more robust business and you can, we can talk about auto. But anyway, think about auto, travel, dining. All three of those are going to come into play this holiday season. Don't let it go by the wayside. So enough said. It's a chapter in Tax and Legal Playbook. I've got YouTube videos on this and articles. Don't discount it. Big write-off. Number two, the more technical item. I consistently get phone calls. Had an attorney walk into my office this week, one of our associate attorneys, and say, hey, I got this cost segregation client. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Now, for those that are a quick 30-second tutorial, when you buy real estate, a commercial or residential property, you can do what's called a cost segregation, where you split the property into land, building, attachments, window treatments, carpet, flooring, blah, 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 all these little things. And you can split the building into pieces and parts and then depreciate it faster and get a bigger write-off the year you acquire it through bonus depreciation, 179 depreciation, all these great little write-offs. On paper, looks amazing. It's freaking amazing to go out and buy a property and get a cost seg. In fact, some sellers may even include a cost segregation with the sale. Well, cool. And you're going to run in and give it to your accountant. But here's the tip. I am not kidding. We may only see 5% or less of our clients. And we're talking thousands of clients throughout the year that are doing real estate deals and we're doing their tax returns. 5% of our clients actually get to use the write-off because you can't deduct that loss against your ordinary income unless you are a real estate professional or your spouse. And if you have a day job, you may say, I do a ton of real estate. I'm a real estate professional. Well, there's rules for that. We've had podcasts on this topic. It's a chapter in my book. And you can, again, go to YouTube and type Kohler Real Estate Professional and watch a little video or two. I've got a full half hour in my tax and legal library at markjkohler.com and 40 plus videos for a few hundred bucks that are very, very informative. So you can study up on that. But here's my point again. Before you get all excited and hear someone from the stage or on a webinar or a phone call tell you how great a cost segregation analysis is, and they are, it's just that not everybody can use what the cost segregation produces. So just go in with your eyes wide open. It's like a red herring. This is like the red dress in the Matrix. You know, Keanu Reeves is walking through with Lawrence Fishburne through the Matrix, and it looks so real. It looks awesome. I mean, on paper, theoretically, it would be cool, right? He's like walking through the Matrix, and this woman walks by in a red dress, and what's it do? Catches his eye, and he turns his head for a minute, and then boom, there's one of the agents right there with a gun in his face because he got distracted. So we got to keep our eyes on the ball. We got to have our 10-year plan, huh? Mm-hmm. Not get distracted. Yeah. This is the transition.
Nice little feel it coming. There.
Yeah, we're gonna keep our eye on the ball, keep moving the ball down the field, and not get distracted with the cheerleaders or the boy or girl cheerleaders on the side, whatever you're. Gender may be, or whatever your interest may be, but this is—it's just so important that you keep that focus. Don't get distracted. Mm-hmm. Don't let cost mm-hmm. segregation get you off the real plan that you might be implementing. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. I like it. All right.
Now, I'm thinking of cheerleaders. Can I tell you why?
Apparently, because of football season, or
and it's for a very appropriate reason. I'm going to disclose
it. I'm waiting.
It.
I'm interested in where you're going.
Matt's like, oh no, now we're going to have the FTC, you know. Matt with bated breath. What's my partner going to do now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to disclose it here now. You're the first to hear of this, people, because by the time this is published, I'm going to be okay. This is not our live open forum broadcast. So I got a day or two here to play with. My Halloween costume. Okay. SNL cheerleaders.
Okay. The Will Ferrell.
Right. I'm Will Ferrell.
I thought you were going to like admit that you were a cheerleader in high school or something. I was like,
No. But I've got my Spartan outfit ready to go and TV theme this year. So at our party. And so I'm going as Will Ferrell as an SNL cheerleader. My wife, Jennifer, but last night we were practicing our cheer, you know, and awesome. It's going to be good. I'm just saying. So
cool. That's a good one.
I think it's going to be good. You know, my hair, I have Will Ferrell hair. If I don't put any gel in it, it's just kind of out there. It's just kind of, it's a little work.
I like it.
I haven't got a haircut for 2 weeks. Been prepping.
Good. Smart.
Have you got your costume down for Halloween?
I do not. I do not. Okay. I'm going to work on it though. I'll do something. Don't you worry.
We got one more podcast before Halloween. So I'm expecting a declaration next week.
Okay. All right. Stay tuned.
For our listeners.
Yes, of course. They're very interested in this, I'm sure. All right. Well, let's get into the topic, if you don't mind.
Sure. Whatever.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about setting a 10-year vision. And I just want to say first, this is in my bag that goes with me everywhere I go. And I have a 10-year vision in terms of finances, personal health, family relationships. I mean, I've set it out for many different categories and you can use it for many different things. But I want to just hit the first part on it. And Mark and I, we can just tag team this, is why 10 years? Why are we talking about 10 years?
Oh, okay.
And the reason I want to hit that first is 10 years takes out a lot of hurdles that people think, well, I can't do that. It takes out lack of education, lack of employment, all these things all these hurdles that we say, well, I just can't do that. If you think about it in a 10-year window, no, pretty much anything's achievable in 10 years. So that's why we do 10 years. And it's also something that you can legitimately think of yourself in 10 years. So where I think you need to start on this is think of yourself in 10 years. What are you doing? What does it look like? Who is with you? all of those things. Where do you really want to be? Who is the person you want to be in 10 years, right? And now we work backwards in terms of how do I get there? Where do I need to be in 5, 3? And then every 1 year, which is where 1 year are kind of your action items of what you're going to do. And it can seem overwhelming, I think, sometimes when you think 1 year I need to do all this. But if you look in the grand scheme of things and where you want to be in 10 years, this is how you really do it. This is really how you get stuff done. And you can really have transformational change in your life. No one changes anything tomorrow. A lot of people have this misunderstanding that, well, I just want to solve this financial problem in my life. I'm just going to start doing this tomorrow. It's not going to change tomorrow. You're going to make a little bit of improvement, but this transformational thing and where you want to be in your life in 10 years, which is probably some big lofty goal, and it should be, it's going to take 10 years.
Okay.
Maybe you get there faster.
I love it. And that's a great intro to where this topic is going, because not only did Matt address why 10 years, but kind of the format of what this is going to look like with a kind of a reverse engineering of what you're going to do next year to get to the 10 years. So many people say, well, I'm going to do this year without a real long-term vision. So, okay, now before we keep, you know, go backwards and do a few other things, and I've got some great examples. The next thing that I'd like to add to Matt's concept of why 10 years is the concept of writing it down. And we call this the ideal scene. And Matt kind of alluded to that. You know, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And we're going to focus on the finances. I'm not going to try and fix your relationships. That's outside of my pay scale. You cannot pay me. I can't do it. I can't.
Yeah.
Matt doesn't.
You can't be an expert at everything. So yeah. You may not want our advice there anyways.
You don't. No. Okay. So I can teach you how to write off your spouse on your tax return, but not get rid of them, you know, in your relationship. That's just not in my plan of attack. Okay. But here's the deal. That's what we call the ideal scene. You're going to sit down, and I challenge you after this podcast, and I've done a YouTube video on this as well, is go find that quiet spot. Maybe it's by the mountains, in a park, in a spot of your home, looking out at the trees, or it's at the ocean, wherever that spot is where you feel that you can get some inspiration and it's quiet and your phone's not even near you. You're not going to get a text and you're going to meditate and ponder and go, what does it look like 10 years from now? That's realistic. What would my finances look like in 10 years? If I could take away these common constraints of time and knowledge and capital, and I could really do it, what's doable? And then you write it down. You write it down. And I like what Matt taught me. This is Matt and his wife actually taught me this concept 5 or 6 years ago, and we combine it with some other trainings from other people, is you write it like a story. And I like Matt just said it. Who are you sitting next to? What are you doing? What does your bank account look like? Be very, very specific. And that's the ideal scene.
Yeah. And when we're talking about finances and from the financial standpoint, is most people want financial freedom. You know, there's a book, Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom, Mark J. Kohler. You can check that out. Yeah. But most people want financial freedom, right? You want to have enough income. Many people want passive income or enough assets that they don't have to go work unless they want to. And maybe that's achievable in 10 years. Maybe it's getting to a place where you have more financial freedom than you have now. But I think 10 years, and Mark said, you know, it's realistic. You can set a realistic goal, but I also want you to think of, when you think of 10 years, you can get pretty cool on where you want to be. You can make huge improvements over 10 years. You can transform your life in 10 years. You can't in 1 year. You're just not going to financially. It's totally unrealistic. But in 10 years, it's possible. It's not only possible, it's likely if you can set the goals and stick to it and have some discipline about it. So, all right. Okay. Well,
Matt, could I add something to that?
Yes.
One thing you said, Matt, that I think we need to address is, what should, and we're going to get into the specifics. This is really powerful, people. This is not all touchy. We're going to be very specific of the things I'd want to write in my 10-year plan regarding those specifics of financial goals I might have. But one thing that Matt said was financial freedom. I try to use the word flexibility. When I wrote that book, I fought tooth and nail with my publisher that I wanted financial flexibility. Remember that, Matt? I was so mad. Freedom to me is a little intangible, I think. And that means, but I want flexibility so I can do what I want. And so yeah. I think if you're trying to build a 10-year plan where you're totally independently wealthy and I'm laying on a beach and, you know, the Riviera, you know, no, just something that gives you a little more breathing room and flexibility. And you know what's true? So many entrepreneurs, many, many, many of you listening to this show, you're not going to retire. You're just going to change what you're doing. Do something a little bit more different about making wealth 10 years from now, but you're still going to be working. And I just pulled this up. It's so interesting. Do you know that when people theoretically retire, that negative health consequences are more likely to happen, and it jumps up by 2% after this is a study on men that when they turned 62 and they retired, their death rates went up by 2% just by simply retiring, by not being actively engaged in something. And so I think,
yeah.
I don't think that, so my, in summary, I'm going to rephrase it. Being financially free or setting up your 10-year plan is not a design to make you lazy or not be engaged in something in 10 years, but to give you the flexibility that you can be engaged in something more that you enjoy. Anyway, just wanted to throw that out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Where were you going to go? You want, so we got our ideal scene.
Yeah. Well, I think you got to start. I like to start with where are you at now? Okay. So from a financial standpoint, what is your income? What type of debts and liabilities do you have? Do you have money in a retirement account? What tax strategies are you using? Or do you have a health savings account? I like you got to set your basis of where you are. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think, do I have rental real estate? Do I own my own business? And some people, you don't want to change something, right? Some of you are like, I love what I do for work. I love my employment. I just want to maybe make some money on the side or build some assets so that I have some passive income. Some people are already own a business. Some of you own a lot of rental real estate or, you know, so everybody's at a different spot, but we want to break down the basics of what you have. And because then you start adding goals onto that in terms of what are you going to add to. If, and let's just think about this. Let me just talk about retirement accounts for a second. This is one where I think when you think about it in 10 years, it's pretty exciting. Even if you make zero return on your money, if you're like, all right, I have no money in my 401k. What if you work at a day job where they do a match and you start putting in the maximum of $19,000 as the employee, your company's putting in a match of maybe, let's say, $6,000. You're putting in $25,000 a year into a 401k. Over 10 years with no return, you have $250,000 in your 401k. From where you are today till then, that's pretty freaking awesome. Maybe you're doing a backdoor Roth IRA on top of that. There's a, you know, and if you're a small business owner or you've got your own solo K, you could be doing $56,000 a year. And again, no increase in the account based on returns. You have over $500,000 in your solo K. And I think a lot of people, when they think of retirement accounts, especially people when I go out and speak, they're like, well, I'm at zero. Well, everybody started at zero. Everybody that had a retirement account, all of our clients have these $1 million and $10 million retirement accounts. They started at zero at one point, but at 10 years, man, you can make significant improvement and life-changing moves over a 10-year period.
I love it. Okay. And let me comment on that quote unquote baseline. I like that you use that word. What's my baseline right now? So I know what the future could look like. And I want to share an example. So I had some clients that I met with last week and they came to the office and they said, Mark, we want a plan. And here's our 10-year plan. They had written it down. I was like, oh, cool. All right, let's see what we got. They'd been to my workshop before and they were ready to go. They knew I was going to ask, so they were ready to go. And as they verbalized it, I could see them going, oof, maybe this was a little too aggressive. And they had said that they wanted, I'm going to just say over 40 rental properties. I'll just say that. They wanted to have a lot of rental properties 10 years from now. And I asked, how many rentals do you have now? Zero. Okay. And that's okay. But I could see right then, once you verbalize your plan, a lot of times you can be saying it going, that was a little too much, or maybe that was a little too little, you know, because I want to have one rental in 10 years. Well, you say it and you're like, I could do better. So there's a feel good spot. So anyway, I said, what's your baseline? Okay, cool. And where do you want to be? I looked at him. I go, oh, maybe a little aggressive, but let's just talk about it. And I said, how much credit card debt do you have now? And what do you have in the bank and what's your income level at and this and that. And I said, okay, let's just say we had a goal of 10 rental properties 10 years from now. Our goal would maybe to be have 5 rentals in 5 years, and let's get 3 rentals in the next 3 years and 1 rental this year. Let's make a goal of 1 rental this year. Does that sound right? And they go, yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I go, what happens if I told you no rentals this year? And they're like, what? Well, I mean, by definition, Mark, if we're going to have 10 rentals in 10 years, shouldn't we get one this year? And I go, you're not ready for it. Sometimes we have to take one step back to improve our baseline before we can really start on that journey. Because if you go out and buy one rental now and you've got 40 grand in credit card debt, we're not being responsible. So let's get strong. Let's get structurally strong. Let's get a baseline that we can build upon. I gotta work with a foundation before I can go build a 5-story building on it. You guys want to build floor number one, and you've got soft soil here. We're gonna have to tear this thing down in 3 years because you don't have the foundation to really build that 10-year vision. And they said, and they were like, well, that doesn't feel like we're making progress in our first year. I go, oh, no, you're making progress. But it may not feel like it, but you are, because you're building that foundation that your 10-year plan can be supported by.
Mm-hmm. Love it. And I think everybody, when that's where you got to start with what's your baseline. Some people have a debt issue. Like your next 10 years might be get out of debt, make more money. Like get out of debt, improve my job situation, get a better job, get a side hustle going. Like that could be. And maybe that's your first 5 years of your 10-year
plan. That's right.
Or your first three. Some people are already there. They're like, I have no debt. I have very minimal debt. I can handle it within a year, you know, and I've been responsible there. I own my home. Some people don't own a home, you know. So everybody's got a little different baseline of where you got to start.
Yeah.
But we want to think of how can I make transformational change in 10 years?
Yeah. And you don't have to... And I'm going to use one other analogy. Let's say that 10-year plan is similar to a journey and you're going to go 10 miles. All right, let's just say. And are you going to just start walking the minute you decide on that path? Or are you going to take maybe a few hours or depending on maybe it's 100 miles, whatever the distance is, aren't we going to take a minute to put on the right type of shoes? Put on the right type of gear, pack a bag, get some water, maybe eat dinner, carb up. See, we got to prepare before we can go on the journey of 10 miles rather than just start walking. And sometimes people feel like, well, I'm not making progress. I haven't even started walking. Oh, no, you're going to be able to walk, but you don't want to get 3 miles down the road and have forgotten something or be out of water. And now you're on the side of the road and you're bummed because you're like, damn it. I'm never going to make my 10-year plan. Well, it's because you weren't ready to go on the journey. Let's prepare first.
Well, let's even just start at the 1-year chunks. Let me just talk about some common things people are doing in 1 year or maybe even 3 years.
I like that. Okay.
Many of you may be there and like, I have terrible income. You know, you could have the debt problem, which you've talked about a little bit, and getting out of credit card debt or high interest debt, but some of you may just have a terrible income. I need to improve my employment skills or my education. And when I say education, I'm not just talking about a 4-year college degree or something. I'm talking about professional training, other educational training you can do, skills training. There's a lot of things that go into training. Okay. So, that's a 1-year thing. There's many things you can do to improve your skills, get licensed in something. Learn a business that could be profitable. Those are educational things you can do in 1 year. And many of those things can improve a job you're already at. They could add a small business, but it's improving your earning power, essentially, by doing some educational things, learning more, educating yourself so that you're able to grow. Another thing that'd be common is improve your network. Who are you? If you have a business idea, let's say one of your goals is to start a business, who is your network of people? Are you meeting with people in the industry you want to be involved with? Do you know what's going on in your industry? Do you have contacts and stuff that are going to be useful to you as you start that business? Start networking, get mentors, do all these things that are definitely achievable within a year that don't cost money, but require some time and effort on your part.
I like it. And I think as part of that network is sharing the plan and the writing down of it. Because as you share it, people will ask you about it. You're going to feel like you're being held accountable. And so I just wanted to add, it's not just the network of who's going to help you do it. It's the network of who's going to hold you accountable to do it too, of who's going to ask me about it.
Yeah. And let's say one of your goals is to start a business. That's one goal within your 10-year financial plan. That's not the financial plan itself. That's one thing. But to start that business, you may need a lot of different things to happen. You may need to get your debt in check and get that figured out. You may need to get some education, grow your network. That's going to increase your possibility for that business to be successful. One of the things we talk about is adding a board of advisors or board of directors to your new company, what we do when we set up the entity. Those are people that you're going to talk about your 10-year plan to, especially your plan with respect to the business itself. So if it's starting a business or anything, that just I want to be clear, that's one thing within many things, because you may still want to get rental real estate. You may still want to, you're going to want to still get rental real estate. Yeah. You're still going to want to be figuring out how you can maximize contributions to a retirement account and savings. You're still going to want to talk about paying off your home or buying one if you don't have one. All those things. And maybe you're in a great place. Maybe you've got a successful business. Maybe you're doing great at maximizing your retirement accounts. You know, but everybody still seems to want to get to the next level. How do I get more flexibility than I already have?
Okay. I love it. Now here's, and this may be close to the summary for me. Now let's practically give you, if we may, just from our perspective, 5 to 10 things that you would want to address in your 10-year plan. So the first one is, what's your debt structure? You want to say, I'm out of consumer debt. Now that may happen in the first year or two, but still write it down. Say in 10 years, I want to be completely out of consumer debt, which is kind of defined as the credit cards. Mm-hmm. You may say in 10 years, I want to have my automobile paid for. And maybe it's not as cool or sexy automobile, but at least it's paid for.
Yep.
And let's take the rich dad, poor dad, you know, millionaire next door approach. We don't have to say, I want a Range Rover paid for. Is that really smart? No.
Yeah.
Let's just, so my auto's paid for. And you may say my home is half paid off or fully paid off, depending again on your baseline. So where's your home mortgage stand?
Mm-hmm. Or maybe a goal could be to get it paid down enough so you're not paying mortgage insurance. Maybe you have, you know, private mortgage insurance, or you're paying that, which is a total ripoff. That's a big transformational change. Get that loan paid down to get out of that mortgage insurance.
Yep. How much rental property do you have? And you may not know what kind of rental property it is or where it is or how much it's cash flowing, but you could at least come up with a number of rental properties. Or another approach I've had clients take is, how much rental property cash flow am I generating? Mm-hmm. I want $5,000 a month coming in cash flow. And then I've had a third item people will say is, I want $1 million in rental property equity, which could be 3 properties or 10 properties. I don't know. So you choose the factors that are important to you. And you could mention all three. I want to say, I want 4 rental properties. I want at least $500,000 in equity. And I want $2,000 a month in cash flow. And you want to make a realistic wish list, but that's what I'm thinking. Now, Matt, on this list of 5 to 10, let's go to retirement accounts. What would you say should be in savings, like dollar-wise, or retirement accounts?
Yeah, well, we got to look where you're at, of course. If you're starting from zero, the first thing I would say is start doing a Roth IRA. Assuming you qualify, you can at least do a backdoor Roth IRA, but start putting $6,000 in a year. That's very doable, $500 a month into a Roth IRA. Next step after
that note, you may say, I want a Roth IRA with at least $50,000 in it. Mm-hmm. And like that's it. Even if you got zero return, which is not what we want for you, but you can say, I want $50,000 or $100,000 in my Roth IRA.
Right.
Or mine and my spouse's, or I may not even be married. I want to be, now we're getting into the emotional side. I'm going to be married by then. That's one of my goals. And I want my spouse to have the same amount or whatever. So, okay. But anyway, Roth IRA, give it an actual amount that's realistic.
Yeah. So, and then next I would say, if you work at a company that has a 401k, participate in that 401k, at least to get the match, at least enough to get the match if you can afford it. If you have money, like you've paid down debt, you've got your consumer debt paid off, then you want to start maximizing that contribution to the 401k.
And if you're a small business owner, you're going to have a more robust retirement plan in conjunction with the Roth. So let me say it another way. Either you're going to be working for someone, funding a 401k, or you're going to have your own small business and doing something on top of the Roth, like a SEP or a solo 401k or some sort of safe harbor. So don't just say, oh, I did my Roth, I'm okay. Nah, this is really a two-pronged approach, whether you're employed or you're self-employed. One of the two.
Yep.
I want to talk
and
about-
And that could be a good 10-year goal for someone that really wants to go for it, I think, is to have $300,000 in retirement accounts. Very doable. If you're maxing out a 401k and you're doing a Roth IRA, even if you take a couple years where you don't contribute because you got to get your debt in line, you could do it. That's very possible.
Prepare for the journey before you just start socking money away. Get rid of those high interest credit cards. I'm going to talk about reserves. I think you want to be sitting on that beach looking at your financial picture and saying, okay, I've got at least 3 months to 6 months of cash available in a money market as an emergency reserve. So 3 months of my living costs, up to 6 months of my living costs available, earning maybe an interest rate of 1 or 2%. It's not going to be killing it, but it's immediately available for opportunities and emergencies. Mm-hmm. Because you never know when an opportunity would come quickly. You need quick access to cash, or an emergency comes, you need quick access. Credit cards are for building your FICO score, not for using for emergencies. Mm-hmm. We're building points and FICO scores. That's it. We're paying them off monthly and that sort of thing.
The next thing, talk about your business, if you have one. Many of you I know are business owners listening, and how you can improve your earning power there. And making, I mean, you're going to have your own business plan, of course, and strat plan on how you're going to get there, but it's part of your financial plan. It all ties together. What resources and time and effort can you put in from your overall financial plan that's going to affect your business? And maybe you're like, I don't have a business and you want to start a business. Again, you start making the 1 year goal of getting ready to start it or starting within that year, and then think through how you're going to grow it and where it can be in 10 years.
And be specific, just like the rental properties. I want to have 2 million in sales, and because right now you're at 500,000 in sales or whatever it is. If you have a business now, you may again focus on sales. You may focus on cash flow. I want my business producing X number of draws for me after expenses. And third, you may even have some interesting intangibles. Like I want to have 30 employees, and 30 employees for me will equate to where I want to be, or I want to have 4 locations, or I want to have 3 pieces of equipment that I'm running. Mm-hmm. I've got a client that's a trucking company. I was just working on his project this morning. For him, he goes, I want to have 10 rigs that are out there working for me. That's his goal. And he doesn't need to worry about sales or number of drivers. He wants to worry about trucks. And some of you in drilling or engineering or raw land, our partner, Liddell Air, uses the term key performance indicator. He serves KPI. On a board. Yeah, KPI. Thank you, man. Okay. Thanks for jumping in. I like that. Key performance indicator. You, a lot of upper level management CEOs and business owners that have been around the block can look at their business and within 2 or 3 numbers determine its health. And so you want to know what is my KPI indicator or key performance indicators, and tie that to part of your 10-year goal. I want to have an indicator of X or Y. I've got one more. Do you have another one that you would put in your wish list? Your 10-year plan?
Oh, yes. Well, we haven't talked about just other outside investments.
Okay.
Which I would consider. You know, you may have real estate. Sometimes a lot of our clients that I've seen that have success. Let me back up and say, my biggest insight into this was working with clients on their estate plans. When we do a client's estate plan, we take an inventory of what are your assets, and we need to know that for certain estate tax purposes. And I remember just sitting down with clients over the years, and I get a good snapshot. And the clients that ended up having a couple $1 million, a $10 million net worth, a $5 million, a lot of times they live in the same neighborhood as the couple that came in that had $100,000 net worth and doing an estate plan. But what differentiated them was a few things. Owning a business, owning rental properties, having very, very low debt, if any. The only debt they seemed to have was on their home or on producing assets like a rental property or in their business. But they also sometimes had some other investments. Maybe they had some notes out there that were secured on real estate when they had cash. They didn't just throw it in the stock market. They kind of lent it out, kind of private money lending rates. They were invested in other businesses. They became partners in other businesses. And they kind of got to a point where they're like, they could be the cash partner in businesses and not have to work it, but participate in the cash flow. And of course, you can have a stock and brokerage account and, you know, money market accounts and stuff like that. But there are sometimes those other investments that once you're accumulating wealth and now you need to put money to work, you can find those opportunities and you'll get those types of assets also getting picked up on your, you know, in your analysis of things.
Yeah. And on that list, I would add like precious metals. And these might be prepper type issues. I know that some people out there and it's true. I mean, more and more, I think it's an increasing segment of our society says there's going to be a crash more than we've ever expected. And maybe it's all the zombie TV shows and movies. I don't know. But a lot of people go, you know, hey, if there was a significant crash far worse than what happened in 2007 or 8, do I have gold in reserve? Do I have maybe certain type of liquid assets buried in my house somewhere or in a safe? And do I have resources that are not tied to the economy directly? Maybe there's a cabin involved or a ranch house or some sort of asset that's off the grid. And we have clients that do that. You know, that's one of their main goals. I want to have a cabin off the grid where I can just go and just hide out if I needed to, or just get away. And I'm going to put this is a good transition for the last item on my list. And that is the wish list. It's okay. Have fun with this. Say, I want to have a boat. I want to have two snowmobiles. You know, it's not all about just save and be Scrooge and not have anything to enjoy. It's okay to put some of those things down. Now, don't go be over the top, but what's important to you? I want to have a swimming pool. I've always wanted a swimming pool. I'm going to have a swimming pool or whatever it is. And that's okay. Put that in your 10-year plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes those are things that are nice to get when you reach a certain level. Once I've paid off my debt, I can get the boat. Once I've maxed out my retirement account, I can take the European vacation, you know? So sometimes it's good to set those goals and the fun things upon accomplishing a certain task or getting to a certain spot where you can have a sense of accomplishment, feel good about it. Also know you've done the hard work and can reward yourself.
Yeah. I like that vacation idea too. You can say part of my 10-year plan is by the time I get to my 10 years, I wanted to have visited two other continents.
Yeah.
Or you've always dreamed of going to Australia or New Zealand and walking the trail of Lord of the Rings. You know, I want to go to Hobbitville. Okay, cool. Yeah. Write it down.
And you have to do that. You know, I think some people out there. No, I mean, you have to go.
Sorry. I just thought you were like, I know you like Lord of the Rings, but I didn't know you were that strong.
Everybody's got to go to Hobbitville. Everybody. This is, you've got to go do the things that in life that, you know, that create happiness for you. And if you're like me, I am the over planner. I'm the person that's done the 10-year plan since I was like 18 years old, you know? And I foregoed a lot of the fun things in life. And now as I'm getting older, I'm like, man, I've been too hardcore about this. And so you do need to have some balance in this. And I think those, and seriously, but plan it. Even me, like, you got to plan those things into your life. Like, if I don't plan a vacation, I just will not go. Yeah. Like, you got to book that, calendar it, but put it in your plan and know that you can do those things as you're having discipline. And it's planning for balance, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I don't know.
Yeah. And I'll throw out last two concepts, because we just get into this. We geek out on this. We're planners. We love it. And this is when we do our business retreats. There's some fun involved, but we love to just plan and carve these things out. But I would say use the term bucket list. You know, what are those bucket list things that I would like to do during my life that are even beyond the 10-year plan? Mm-hmm. And the last thing I'd like to say is you can change it. It's your plan. You know, if you get into this 3 years and go, wow, I was not ambitious enough. I didn't know how good I could do or how well I could do. Sorry, bad grammar. I didn't know how well I could do when I focused like this. Oh my gosh, I've got to revisit it. Or wow, that was too ambitious. It's just, it's too much on me. And you know what, people, I want to say this too. I was talking to someone just within the last week that said, Mark, I'm not like you. I cannot work 12 hours a day and go to bed happy and wake up the next day and do it. And there's people that can do more hours than me. And there's people that can only do, and no one, don't compare yourself to someone
right.
like me or anyone else. You look at your life and what you can accomplish and what you're capable of, and it's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's not a foot race. It's a journey. And your journey may have more ups and downs and more twists and turns than someone else's. And someone else may be just plugging along. I mean, I did a marathon, not a marathon. I did a 5K, 10K. I don't know. It was a long time. It was really felt hard.
Well, he really walked that one down. I did a marathon.
No.
No, no. Nice.
I think it was a fun run.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I was saying was I watched a marathon. It's true. Yeah. I was at the Boston Marathon 2 years in a row because we had these friends that they wanted to run it. I'm like, great. I'll sit on the sideline and eat food. Anyway, so I was at the Boston Marathon and it blew my mind. There'd be men and women coming through with pretty darn good times. And I'm like, holy crap, that guy or girl, they are overweight. What are they doing?
Yeah.
And they're just blazing along. And then I'd see someone else look totally fit rolling 2 hours later. And I'm like, don't let appearances deceive you. You may compare yourself to friends or family or neighbors and go, I'm a loser. Don't even go there. No. Just compare yourself to yourself and love life and do the best you can, people. Don't get me started on spiritual concepts too, but just don't overdo it. I think we can kill ourselves.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you guys found that helpful. I know, Mark, you go over this in your workshops a little bit too. Mm-hmm. We have some content. If you want some worksheets and stuff, we have some of those. We've done them in trainings with our office and staff. They're amazing. One thing to go watch, go watch Lululemon Creating a Vision. There's a video out there. It's one that I found, and I found very powerful to help set your vision in all aspects of your life. It can be really cool. But thanks for listening. If you like the show and you're still listening, please do give us a 5-star review. You can do that on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the podcast. And we will, of course, be back next week with another amazing hour of refreshing topics.
Woo.
With Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen on the Refresh Wealth Podcast. See you then.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.